Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry in Trinity College Dublin. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Brendan, this Monday, or Blue Monday, as it's known, is allegedly the most depressing day of the year. So, look, we're going to talk about Buddhism and Zen and stuff like that today, and maybe see if there's anything practical we can take from it to help us stay kind of calm and happy and all of that. So are you a Buddhist, or is that a trick question kind of?
Ah, that is a trick question, because a true Buddhist would say there is no such thing as being a Buddhist. But you know, I wouldn't say I'm Buddhist, but I have tendencies. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
There's a Zen koan that says, if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him. And what that is saying is that there is no separate Buddha, as it were, that we get caught up in ideas about things. I am a Buddhist. I am not a Buddhist. Rather than focusing on the content. So not so much with the labels, maybe more with the practices and the thoughts and the ethos of Buddhism, which is everywhere now, be it in mindfulness, be it in self-help books. You know, it's all over the place at the moment.
How did you first come across Buddhism?
Well, I've always been interested in religions and traditions, spiritual traditions. And many years ago, I did a degree in Buddhist studies a long time ago, and I was fascinated by it. It's a very rich spiritual, religious tradition, cultural tradition as well. And then I watched over the following years as mindfulness became such a buzzword. And I watched with interest and with some joy to see this really good practice. And then with, I don't know, I was a little bit aghast at how oversold various very simplistic forms of mindfulness are. So more recently, I went off and trained as a mindfulness teacher to try and, you know, bring a little bit of proportionality to the mindfulness movement, to try and, you know, understand it a little bit more, rather than turn mindfulness into what's called a McMindfulness, or just a bumper sticker on a car, rather than a profound practice that can really help people.
OK, so we might come back to that and what real mindfulness is. You went to Japan for one stage as well, yeah, and saw it in action in the monasteries and that kind of thing, yeah?
Yes. Many years ago, I went for 2 weeks to Japan, where the main spiritual traditions are Shinto, which is to do with the spirit being present in nature and all animate and inanimate objects, and Buddhism as well. And the Zen gardens of Kyoto are so, you know, they're just so beautiful. And, you know, Zen Buddhism, which is a type of Buddhism, has this extraordinary aesthetic that is seductive, that, you know, that draws you in. You know, we aspire to the simplicity of the Zen gardens with their immaculate stones and their rocks and their meanings. And I was very taken by that on that trip to Japan all those years ago. So that fueled it further. And of course, in Japan, what you find is this really pragmatic mix of Shinto and Buddhism, a sort of almost an a la carte approach to the two traditions, which is something we're seeing emerging here as well, as people pick and choose.
Like, I've heard it said that the religions of the East, some of them, are not religions in the way we understand, or Catholicism, whatever, that they're more maybe psychological kind of religions. And like that, for example, in business, a company will often send a guy off on a Zen retreat when he gets a promotion to help him to work in the world and in the workplace.
Yeah, so they are differently structured. So, for example, in Buddhism, there is no God. There is the historical figure of Buddha, who was a teacher and who took the view that he had techniques, if you like, psychological techniques, mental techniques. And the advice was to try these things, be they meditation or other practices. See, do they work out in your life? See, do they help you? See, do they resonate with you? And if so, great. And if not, no worries. Stick with your existing religious or spiritual.
So we're not threatening anyone's Catholicism today. They can be a bit Buddhist.
Yeah.
And maintain their Catholicism.
They absolutely can. And I mean, Buddhism is very chilled with people belonging to other religions and adapting bits of Buddhism. Other religions are maybe not so chilled about the mix and match approach.
Yeah.
And there are problems with the mix and match approach as well, because you do miss some of the deeper resonances of Buddhism if you simply pluck mindfulness, for example, out of its cultural context and sprinkle mindfulness gently over your life in various ways. You are gaining something something, but you're also missing some of the depths and the additional dimensions. But no, nobody's Catholicism is threatened by some Buddhist practices.
Okay, so you mentioned Zen there, and you wrote this book, The Doctor Who Sat for a Year, and I think that was your dabbling in Zen Buddhism. Can we even talk about Zen, what it is, what it isn't? They would say, like, if you're explaining, you're losing, yeah?
Yeah, and I mean, there is a lot of that in Zen. Zen Buddhism is one type of Buddhism. It's not a very large school, to be honest, but it has great attraction for a lot of people, intellectual attraction, which is ironic, because the essence of Zen Buddhism is to move beyond or beside or around the thinking mind. Other kinds of Buddhism see enlightenment as a very steady path. You progress along, taking steps and getting closer, whereas Zen Buddhism sidesteps the thinking mind and tries to focus on what they call direct realization of the nature of reality. And what this means is practicing Zen meditation in the hope of a sudden, and there might be sudden enlightenment. One should not be hoping for sudden enlightenment.
Yeah.
I misspoke.
So if you're trying, you're losing, yeah?
If you're trying, you're losing.
Okay.
If you're not trying, you're losing.
Okay.
It is neither about trying nor about not trying. And there is a saying in Buddhism that it is neither one thing nor the other thing, nor is it neither, and nor is it both. So it's an almost impossible thing. And what Zen is doing with these little koans, these little riddles as well, is it's trying to shut down the thinking mind or get around it, because our brains and our thinking minds are very much the problem, Brendan. We overthink. Heaven bless us, our brains are too complicated. Right now, as you sit looking at me, you have 86 billion nerve cells in your brain, and they're all firing a number of different chemicals and connecting with about 10,000 other brain cells. And then there's that number again of other little cells in your brain busily working away.
And actually, when you become aware of the junk that's going through your mind all the time, you realise that most of it, like, is a kind of a toxic sludge, isn't it? Like, I mean, if we could get rid of that, you'd be laughing.
Yeah, so it's an awful lot of activity that is pointless going on in our brains.
Yeah.
And implicitly, everyone tries to stop it happening. The most common way is people go out and drink lots of alcohol, or they take drugs in an effort to quiet their brains, because it's just too much all the time. The trick is to try and find a healthy way of doing that. Our brains are amazing, obviously. We can do astonishing things, but they're just too complex for us to handle.
Can I give you a good trick? I'll think about that later. I'll think about that later.
Yeah, yeah.
It works.
If you defer things, that works very, very well. And, you obviously won't come back to most things later. But Buddhism really teaches you about noticing what's happening in your brain, noticing all the stuff that's going on, and accepting that it is going on. There's a lovely metaphor in Buddhism that the brain is like a tree full of chattering, jabbering monkeys. They're hopping about the place, they're talking to each other, and it will just go on and on meaninglessly. And once you notice that, it's the first step towards maybe stepping away from it a little bit.
Okay. And you mentioned acceptance there.
Yes.
Which I mean, would be a superpower if you could do it. But talk to me a bit about acceptance.
So acceptance is one of these features in mindfulness, which is about noticing what is in the present moment and accepting what is in the present moment. It doesn't mean accepting that what is in the present moment is right or should never change. This is a really important thing about acceptance. So, for example, I need to accept the fact that there is great injustice in the world, because it exists. It is a fact. That does not mean I don't try and change it, but first see what reality is. And that's what Buddhism is about, seeing reality as it is, and then taking action based on that. Not taking action based on what we imagine is there, not taking action based on imagined conversations we will have, but will probably never happen, but seeing reality as it is in the moment, accepting that, and then building your actions based on it.
Okay, that's good, because we're all fighting with reality all the time, aren't we, really? And you're not going to win there.
We are fighting with reality. And, our self-image, for example, is utterly, utterly non-reality based. And that's operationally useful. I don't need to face the full reality of who I am every moment of every day. I would find that a bit horrifying. But when it comes to important decisions, there are things about myself I need to accept.
Okay, so let's talk about a few a la carte Buddhist practices or thinking we could possibly incorporate into our daily lives. So the Buddhists would talk about do one thing at a time, yeah?
Yes, so when you walk, just walk. When you eat, just eat. When you work, just work. And I could go on like that indefinitely, but you get the idea. And Buddhism teaches the middle way. And what this means is you will not succeed in doing what I just said, but you should try as best as feasible that when you eat, just eat. And we can structure this a little better, maybe not having the computer in front of you as you have a sandwich at lunchtime, maybe putting the phone away during dinner time, things like this, steps towards focusing on the activity that you're doing. And there are various mindfulness practices that help. But the big point here, Brendan, is to be compassionate towards yourself, because you will fail in this. You okay. absolutely will. So pick your activities with care. A classic example is brushing your teeth. It is quite hard to do anything else other than brush your teeth when you're brushing your teeth. And we all do it every day, hopefully. So several times a day, or twice or three times a day. Sorry, I'm getting caught up.
Yeah, go on.
And the idea is try not to do anything else while you're brushing your teeth. Some people look at their phones and things like this and try just to think about the feeling of brushing your teeth. So when you brush your teeth, just brush your teeth.
Okay, so little mindful moments you could build into your day as habits. Okay. Is tidiness and order and that important in Buddhism as well?
Yes, it is. Certainly Zen Buddhism has a very particular minimalist aesthetic. And it's very interesting that so many of us find that appealing and yet completely and utterly fail to do that in our lives. Our lives become cluttered with objects, with ideas and with all kinds of stuff. And yet we have this minimalist ideal. So the idea is to clean up and tidy up moderately well, to give a sense of order. There is no need to get rid of everything. We do not need to renounce material possessions. You know, the story of the Buddha is one of renunciation, that at a certain point, this man, this historic or mythic figure, renounced everything, left his home, his position, all his belongings, left his wife and child, and wandered off in search of enlightenment. And for many years was very ascetic, you know, just meditated, did not eat, almost died, and then concluded that all of that had been a waste of time and that he needed a more moderate approach.
And ended up back where he started, basically.
And he did return to the wife and to the child. But
so it was there under his nose all the time. Is it there under our noses all the time if we could just...
If we could just tune into it, it absolutely is. So we don't need to do dramatic things. We don't need to renounce all our belongings, our homes, our careers. We don't need to renounce our clothing and go ambling off naked into the hills in order to be enlightened. It is all here. And Buddhism says that our minds are like glasses of water filled with sand that's swirling around. And if we can simply let everything settle, the sand will settle down and things will become clear and apparent. So tidiness matters, and it is a very good way to start the day. And sometimes midway through the day at work, it's good to sort of tidying one's desk, for example, can serve as a reset. What have I done? What do I need to do? Let's get organized. And that is that has a very Buddhist feel to it as a practice.
OK. And listen, we don't have time for this today, but we might come back to it again. Is the cornerstone habit to encourage all of that mindset is a bit of meditation, is it?
Yeah, a bit of tuning into the moment, a small bit of meditation. And it doesn't have to be very fancy, sitting cross-legged in beautiful surroundings. I'm not a big believer in sudden cathartic change. Small tweaks to habit, a little more mindfulness at a number of points during the day, and then the benefits are apparent at other times. We're less reactive, less likely to fly into a homicidal rage over tiny things, and hopefully that little bit happier.
Okay, I feel more mindful and more demure already. Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry in Trinity College Dublin, thank you very much. We'll take a break.